Black Lives Matter. At the Dropped Again podcast, we wholeheartedly support the Black Lives Matter movement. As individuals of color ourselves, we are allies to our Black brothers and sisters. The time for change is now.
Oh dear.
It's a straight ball catch. Catch you'll see in a playground. A 10-year-old, 11-year-old will catch that and up with their eyes shut.
There it goes. Dropped it again. Can you believe that?
3, 2, 1. Let's do this. Welcome to episode 12 of Dropped Again. Here we are. As always, I have with me my guy, Shahid Keshvani. Shady, how are you?
Buddy, I'm buzzing today, man. I won money off the Raptors win. My buddy, whatever, he has a, you know, like Bet365. So I've never had that before. I'm not a gambler. I went and played blackjack when I was younger, lost all my money at Port Perry, Niagara. I thought I was buzzing, lost my money steady. So I've never been a gambler. Always, like, obviously I know about sports and I love sports, like down to the players, down to the over-unders, down to everything. But I've never put money on it really, like pro line and stuff, but I always lose. I've never won. Bet365 has always been there, whatever, but you know me, I'm lazy. You have to like do all this stuff, like account information, all this. Like, fuck that, man. Sorry. Hard luck. Now my boy has started something. It's the same thing as Bet365, whatever. And I'll talk more about it later on. But I signed up for it. Signed up for it. Boom. They matched whatever I put. It's awesome. Like I'll tell you guys all about it. And then, so anyway, let's talk about what I did. I put Raptors to win by 6.5, which gave me $3.95 to $1. Shady put the $50 on that, but he won $250. I'm buzzing, bro. I had work this morning. It was raining and shit, but I woke up. Dude, double-checked the Raptor score because, like, last night it finished late. Like, I was crushed. Man, interesting story. That's how I started off my day, bro. How was your day?
That's a good win, man. That's a good win. Well, before anything, you know, this week was Eid. So Eid Mubarak to everybody who's celebrating this weekend. That's been my last couple of days, man, just celebrating with my family and then my wife's family. So it's been a good couple of days of family. And then to end it off with the Raptors game, obviously, I was chirping some guys because all these guys are LeBron fans. And they were really hyped after his win on Thursday. But then the Raptors certainly grounded them last night, that's for sure. So I'm happy for you, man. $250, that's not a bad win.
Well, bro, like, you looked at the odds. Like, the Lakers were favored to win by 6, bro. The Raptors are the champs. Like, I don't understand how they don't – like, Vegas, I know how it goes. I know the lines and everything. But when I saw that bet, buddy, I knew the Raptors, OG, the way he stepped up, man. Like, we're a team, bro. And, like, our guys are ready to go. Like, there's no egos. There's none of that nonsense. We don't get overly we're not too much in the American media. Like, we're the champs. They don't even care. And, like, dude, I loved how Kyle Lowry pumped out his chest. Like, buddy, I'm hyped for the Raptors. And then big Leaf game today. So, dude, like, sports. I told you guys in the last episodes, man, like, August is going to, like, this time's going to come around. You guys are going to be playing cricket. King City, it's going to be raining. What's the weather like outside today and tomorrow?
It's rain. It's raining.
Yep. Remember Shady, you know, he's always right. No, hard luck, guys. But you know what? At least you'll be able to stay home. Hopefully they don't tell you to come to King City even though it's raining. And you'll get to stay home and watch some of the early games tomorrow. Like, it's just, dude, there's sports, hockey, and basketball. It's awesome.
Well, there's – right now there's baseball, there's hockey, there's golf on right now, basketball's back, cricket's back. I mean, I think in North American sports there was over 50 games this weekend.
Buddy, it's unreal. But what? Why? Why didn't the baseball guys, like, do the bubble? Like, baseball's about to get canceled, eh?
Oh, yeah. They're all idiots, man. Idiots. They're just canceling series, and then it throws off all rankings because this team hasn't played this team. This team hasn't played enough games. You got 60 games in the season, and half of them you're not even going to play. So how does seeding even work?
But, why didn't they, you know, make it the bubble?
I have no idea. But you know what's crazy is we talked about it in one of the earlier episodes is the content coming out of these bubbles is going to be amazing. Have you seen any of these, like, they're like vlogs on YouTube and stuff? I know JaVale McGee and O'Shea Brissett from the Raptors has done it. JaVale McGee from the Lakers, obviously. I saw one from some guy from the Leafs. I don't even know his name. Komarau Kisus, something along those lines. Some like Finnish or Swedish name.
He must be the Russian.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. One of those like names. So the content is amazing. So not only are you getting all the sports, but you're also getting content outside of it. So the wives are definitely going to hate us for the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, that's for sure. But with that, we're talking about leagues and bubbles and all that good stuff. We got a really good guest on the show today, Shady. Why don't you set the stage?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, like, this guy is one of the more prominent guys. I mean, if you think about it and how he's done it and where he's at, and it's quite remarkable in a short amount of time. You're going to hear about it. Rizwan Mohammed, guy who came in. Dude, this guy's always been super humble, like, from the beginning. So, like, he used to play. And I don't, like, he tells the story in this interview about really where I thought he was, like, playing for Masters and everything. But no, there's a story that came way before that. To have him explain where he's at now, like, we got to say, you know, right now he's the CEO of the Vancouver Knights. You know, they won the first GT20, and he's become heavily involved in the GT20. And for me, I love the GT20. I love T20 cricket. I think that the way that he speaks in this interview is, for me, that was my favorite interview, actually, because there was a lot of things that I didn't know. Usually we bring on these guys, I've kind of been through it with them, but this is a lot of stuff I didn't know. And it was very interesting because it's high performance, top level stuff. Right. And so, yeah, he's the guest on, and it's unbelievable. He talks about standards and he's very, very honest.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I think the one thing I really enjoyed about this interview was he was very candid in the interview, right? Spoke from the heart. Spoke about the things that worked well, but it was also very open about things that weren't. And I think a few people are going to be genuinely shocked about some of the things that I wouldn't say revealed, that's probably the wrong word, but just shed some light into what goes on behind the scenes of putting on a tournament like GT20. And I know some of our listeners, we've got your messages. I know you've been asking for GT20 content. And Rizwan was the only person that I think it was right for him to speak to it, because he's been there since day one. But he's also not somebody who's a liaison officer. He's not somebody who's a manager. He's literally running the Vancouver Knights. Definitely the right person on. What's crazy is he's also been a part of Brampton Masters. And for anybody in Toronto or around the area, since 2007, it's not even arguably, they've been the most dominant team in the league since 2007. 2007 was their first year in the top division of T&D cricket, and they've dominated ever since. Some people will say, well, they got all the players, they did it all. But the one thing I'll say is they definitely did it the right way. They managed to put money in cricketers' pockets that weren't getting any money before. So they set the stage for other teams to start doing the same thing, the likes of Centurions, the likes of Vikings, even the Toronto Cricket Club to an extent. So they definitely did it the right way, and they've been the most dominant. So that recipe for success is what he translated to the Vancouver Knights, who were champions for year one. Real, real heartbreak runners up year two.
Yeah, no, that they are the franchise, man. They have all the entertainers, all the top guns in world cricket. Andre Russell, Chris Gayle, right away. I mean, those are two dominant forces in cricket. And to the Masters point, yeah, 2007 was a time where, dude, cricket really started to get competitive in the league. Like, they brought in all these pros from the West Indies, and it wasn't just one, two, it was like 10. I think they had to adjust the rules a little bit, and like five overseas guys, whatever. I loved it, whatever, man. I think I've spoke about it before many times. It was high standard cricket, high performance cricket, and they set the tone and kind of forced all the other clubs to do that. And you just talked about, yeah, money in the players' pockets, because that was at a time where, you know, Canada cricket wasn't really like, remember, professional cricketers here, not, there's no such thing as a professional cricketer here, first of all. But when we were trying to make money here and there to be able to just get us to survive so that we can make it to the Canada cricket practices, a little bit of gas money, because that's all it was. But now you're looking at, oh man, I could play domestic cricket and make, like, dude, we were making way more money than we were for Canada. Like, I you know, let's just call it what it is. And it's an opportunity for guys to then make cricket a little bit more of a priority. They can practice more. They're able to play more games. They're able to put their mind into it, and you know, the standard was really high at that time. So I loved Masters, I loved what Johnny did, and Riz talks a lot about that in this interview, and it's awesome.
With that, let's kick it off to Rizwan Mohammed. It was a great interview. I think you guys are going to thoroughly enjoy this one. This interview, once again, is brought to you by Yashi Sports. You can reach them on Instagram, on Facebook. They are at Yashi Sports. And now we welcome on a very special guest. If you're from Toronto, you know him from the sidelines for most, if not all, of Brampton Masters games. He's been there since day one with them. But now you may know him globally as the CEO of the Vancouver Knights of the GT20. We welcome to Dropped Again, Rizwan Mohammed. Rizwan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Riz, Riz, man, it's awesome to have you on. Thanks for doing this. I know I only reached out to you a few days ago, and you were very accommodating with your time. I know with your multiple roles that you're in, it's nice to have you spend some time with us on the show. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
You were catching up a little bit before this. You said you're getting accustomed to the new normal. How is quarantine going for you? How's the family? How's everything?
Well, it's been, I guess, like everybody else. I think it's put everybody on a bit of a reset, spending more time with the kids. And, you know, I'd sort of slowed down a lot. Not sort of, but I did slow down a lot. I think I needed this reset because I've been going for the past couple of years just nonstop. I mean, for people around me who knows what I do and so many different things I'm involved in, it gets pretty hectic, and it could take a toll on your body and your health too. So I think this was much needed, not just for myself, but I think everybody in general, you know?
Much needed, but I'm sure you're ready to get back out there. I think it's been a few months now. I can see the itch just even looking at you.
Yeah. I'm on the edge of my seat here. I was just going to get to that. You know, we're all kind of eager to get out there and get back to what we're accustomed doing because, you know, it gets a bit boring. And I say that with the most of respect. I mean, you're accustomed being around cricket. It's in the middle of summer. Not a single ball have been bowled in the league. And, you know, guys are getting frustrated. They're looking at, is he ready can get into a T20 league somewhere? And, you know, just to get out there and you know, get back into the action, right?
Yeah, I was asking you just the other day about T20 cricket, if there's anything around. I also have a little bit of an itch here and there. And it's, you're coming into that boring time. And it just kind of brings me back because, you know, you're now often, you know, looked at as, you know, CEO of Vancouver Knights and running Masters. But I remember you from the beginning stages of Brampton Masters where, you know, you used to run in off of a few steps. You know, you were always the hidden, like they always had the stars, you know, Masters always had the stars, but correctly, every time you played, it was two wickets up front, did your job and spent the overs in the field and batted 11, I guess. So had a great time in the glory days of Masters. Like, tell us, let's take it back to those sort of early days. And, you know, I have a huge respect for Masters. We all want to know, how did Brampton Masters come up to eventually be such a prominent team in the country?
Right. Well, I mean, for me, this cricket is what brought me to this country. I mean, I started off in Trinidad. That's where I was born and I grew up. I played at the youth level. I represented Trinidad at the under 13, the under 15, the under 17 levels. At the brink of the under 19, I was at the trials, never made the team. But at that point is when the transition started for me. And I started making the trips up to Toronto. My first gig was with Islanders, I believe it was. This was back in 99. I played one season with them. And then after that, I ended up moving on to La Club in the Labatt's League. So for me as a young player coming through the ranks in Trinidad and getting the opportunity to come outside of the country, and, you know, I've always been accustomed visiting Canada because I have tons of family up here. Always loved it. My ambition was always to move to Canada. Not in my wildest dreams, I would think, because of cricket, but technically it was not cricket. Cricket led to me meeting the love of my life. The rest was history, So I played about, I would say, three seasons with La Club, after which the late, great Mr. Johnny Bujan, he was always after me while I was at La Club to make that transition with Masters, because I don't know if you remember, but Masters was actually playing in the Labatt's League back then. This was 99, 2000, up until 2003, I believe. In 2004 was when Johnny had approached me and he said, listen, he has a plan. He wants to take a team to TND. His aim, his ambition was to start from the bottom and work their way up in consecutive years. I took him up on the offer, and so said, so happened. So Masters, until now, I believe, if I stand corrected, is the only club in the history of Canadian cricket to come through the ranks in consecutive years, from Division 4 all the way up.
Damn, man, they need to,
so,
they need to have
yeah.
a chime. You know, that's when you go Soka Jam, they have the...
No, you know what? I take a lot of pride, but I'm very humble. I take a lot of pride because it was a lot of work, a lot of effort. I mean, you guys, I know, had enjoyed a good relationship with Johnny over the years. He was never an opponent, but more so a friend. He was one of the guys that united not just players, but administrators from different clubs, right? I know we enjoyed many good years until now with the club, Toronto Cricket Club. So, I mean, it's just the type of person that he was. You know, we can go on and talk about him all night. But I think when we lost Johnny, cricket in Canada took a big blow for many, many different reasons. And, you know, there's never going to be another one like him. I think we've all accepted that. It's just that, you know, we got to pick up and move on and continue to build and you know, try to take cricket in this country back to where it belongs. You know, we want to be back at the top.
Absolutely. And something you touched on it earlier is I played for TCA at the time when the first year Brampton Masters decided to join the TND. And we played a couple of games against you guys, and we knew we were well out of our league. We're 16, 17-year-olds playing against men that have dominated the Labatt's League at the time and coming in. Yeah. And then we watched you work your way up. But the man behind it, as you just spoke so eloquently, was Johnny Bujan. Yeah. Unfortunately, we lost him a few years back. May he rest in peace. I know you said we can go on and on, but just tell us a little bit about, you know, the impact and the legacy that he's left, not only on Toronto cricket and in the TND and the surrounding leagues, but also Cricket Canada, because he did serve as the manager of Cricket Canada for a little while, yes. And many of the players have come through his ranks. Right. But lastly, one of the things that he has certainly done is bring an influx of West Indian cricket and raise the level and the bar of cricket in Canada. So speak to a little bit about the impact of Johnny and the legacy that he's left on that front.
That's an excellent point that you brought up, and I'm very happy that it comes from someone like yourself, someone outside of the Masters circle. I was talking to one of the owners from GT20, season one, and most of these guys, because they're outside they don't live here, and they just wanted some rich history of club cricket. They weren't too interested in the national team, but what's going on at the grassroots level, right? So I immediately went back to Johnny and what... He sort of raised the bar. So back then, not too many clubs was bringing overseas players, but Johnny was in a capacity, I mean, in a few different reasons financially, and he genuinely wanted to push the limits of the local guys to say, hey, we need to have some semi-pros or pros come here, and let's lift the standard. Let's push our boys and show them, say, hey, you guys just need a little bit extra. And having these guys around, you surround yourself with these guys, you play around them, you know, you absorb a bit from what these guys, you know, they bring to the table, you learn from them and build your game. I'll take you guys back to as far back as I think one of the most memorable trophies that we brought home wasn't even a premiership or an elite. Back then, there was no elite. Johnny had always held that first division trophy very, very close to his heart. Was one of the toughest divisions to win.
Yeah,
and many teams have attempted it for so many years and very few won it consecutively. Now, for us, we just came up to that big league and, you know, all these clubs are packed with good players. Mind you, Masters had a pretty good team. We went out there, we did the job, we won. It was a great feeling. I think since that, Johnny realized, he said, you know, this is actually working. Bring in all these, you know, foreign players coming in, helping. We saw where Vikings, amongst other clubs, started bringing foreign players after the second year. And that's when we say, hey, this thing's actually, there's a big benefit here. So you see where guys, the local boys are aspiring to step their game up and the level definitely improved. This is what his vision was. I don't want to make it sound as if it's all about him. Our organization we had a committee. you know, Terry Singh's a very, very instrumental role in this club from since the inception with him and Johnny. Those were the basically the backbone of the club. Other than that, like I said, I mean, Johnny's whole idea was that it was never about creating any sort of animosity or any ill feelings towards other clubs, but rather when we cross that line, yes, he goes out, he wants to win. His ambition is always he wants to win. If he loses, obviously you're going to be a bit down, but you know what? He always had a way about him that he would motivate people. And his demeanor, the way that he lived his life and he treated people, that's what really caused players and some of the players' parents and even strangers that gravitated towards him.
Yeah.
You go up to King City, Johnny's the guy with the biggest smile on his face. He'll give you a beer. He'll offer everybody to come over and eat some food. You know, it was cricket, yes, but it was more for him. It was one big family with all the clubs. I mean, we've gotten into it with some games where, you know, because of the high intensity, stuff happens, right? But it is what it is. But at the end of the day, like I said, I think what he did and the legacy that he built and the platform that he set for us and for me as a younger guy, he was the one that approached me while I was still a player for the club in 2008, I believe, and offered me an executive role in the club as a club secretary. And I still hold that role in addition to cricket operations, where Johnny was the sports director. When he passed, we made a unanimous decision. That role is never going to be replaced. Sports director was always Johnny. I just handle cricket operations. That's basically what it is. So for me, just fast forwarding a little bit now, is that just that platform that I got and learning from him and Kelvin and Terry and these guys, you know, coming through the ranks, and you know, you learn through the good times, than even you learn more through the bad times, because it's, you know, you lose a championship or, you know, you have good players that might leave for some reason and you have to try to rebuild. It puts you back into that thinking box and you got a plan, you got to regroup. And Johnny just had this way about him that he was just blessed putting together a successful team. Like, he'll sit, he'll analyze, he'll be on the phone all hours of the night calling so many guys. And, you know, it was all about strategizing. There was so much stress, but it was a passion for him. He loved what he did and he put everything into it and more, you know. And as you guys would know, I mean, for somebody like him, he was a family guy. It took a lot of time away from his family, but he made it work.
Right.
So for me, I mean, I took a couple pages out of his book. I can't be a Johnny. I'm never going to try to be a Johnny, but whatever I learned from him is what I tried to, you know, put into perspective with the different opportunities that comes up my way. And it's been working. And I mean, I've had good days and bad days, but like I said, the bad days is the one you got to learn from and regroup and go again, right?
That you spoke so well about the legend of Johnny. From our side, from RC and I, like, we were so great. I'm so grateful to have played in that era. I think RC, you can say, yeah, like, the cricket was, I think, at its highest level at that time. And even insight into Toronto Cricket Club during this time early on is when, yeah, Johnny and Masters set the bar, and certain clubs like Vikings and Centurions, and we were all forced to follow.
Yeah.
You know, we were tired of Masters winning all the time, and everybody,
yeah, yeah,
views on it. And the way that you spoke about it is in my, for me, that's how I, that's what I loved about it. I loved the fact that the bar was set high and these amazing players were coming in, because
yeah,
it challenged me and us, and it brought the standard up, no question about it. Johnny's, yeah, will to win and the competitive spirit and people at the games, his personality was so infectious and he was so missed. I've said it on podcast before when,
yeah,
Tim, exactly like you said, we lost a huge part of Canada cricket, but it's guys like yourself, you know, Bawan, Mohan, these guys from these clubs who are always there and keeping things going. And I think it's the responsibility of you, of us, of everybody to try and keep this thing going. I know COVID is a good refresher, but I think,
yeah,
we all do our part to keep things going. And you think about Johnny's legacy, you think about almost doing it for him. Like, I have goosebumps,
yeah,
the time you were talking.
Yeah.
You know, it really makes me miss the guy, because I spent some really quality time with him. Yeah, that's just sort of my piece on that.
Just on that, you know, one thing from you guys last year is you guys had another young Trinidadian come through the ranks for you guys in Josh Da Silva. I know Johnny wasn't here to see him, but also just seeing what he did in England recently, just how proud did that make you in having a part to play in that?
I'm happy you brought that up, because when Shady invited me onto the program today, I think definitely Josh was one of the guys that I wanted to bring up with this, right? What happened last year was that we were in a bit of a bind in many ways, financially, and we were strapped for a couple of decent players to fill that void for the right combination. We need to have a couple of good, all-rounders, seamers, spinners. And we were always lacking over the past couple of years a quality local wicketkeeper batsman. It's with all due respect, the other club have their guys, but I always wanted one, you know, just specifically for Masters, I wanted a local.
I think just on that note, that's not just Masters. I think the entire league has always been searching for that keeper batsman. I think that's something that's always been lacking. Yeah. If it's not for somebody from outside.
Now, right.
Now, so Manta's married. I think his cricket days are done.
Hey, it was that same thing happened to me, buddy. Where's my wife? Anyways, I was talking about Josh. So I don't know if you guys know, but I'm sure you guys probably know by now. Josh is Canadian, right?
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So it's a funny story.
Times again. So
Josh was born in Canada, but he grew up most of his life in Trinidad, right? His parents lived here for a number of years, and they decided to move back to Trinidad, and Josh was just a young kid. So he holds a Canadian passport. So I said, you know what? Let me look at this, because I was involved in 2018 with TKR during the CPL, and I met with his dad, and they've actually reached out to me a couple of times to try to get Josh to come over here and play some cricket. It so happened at that point in time when they asked me, I was pretty much packed with foreign players in 2018. So I said, you know what, guys, my budget would not allow it, but let's look at this next season. So that's what I did. And it was a funny story, because Josh was actually in New York with his girlfriend on vacation. And we were about to start the season, and I said, you know what? Let me call him. I called his dad, and his dad said, hey, he's on vacation. Call him up. He'll come. I said, you're sure? He said, yes. So I called him up. Josh was on the next flight out into Toronto. It's cheaper for me. It's a cheaper ticket, right? So he came in, and that's how it started. So he came in. He played a few games. He made a huge impact, and I'm sure you guys would have seen with the results of some of the matches that he played. For me personally, it was creating that opportunity for Josh, because at that point, Josh was in a bit of a, I wouldn't say a bad spot in his career, but he was in a caught between a rock and a hard place, because it's so tough for him to get into the Red Force setup in Trinidad with so many wicketkeepers, and Dinesh Ramdin being out of the West Indies team and being available for local cricket. It was difficult for Josh, and he felt that, you know, where can he go from here? So I said, listen, come here, let the selectors have a look at you, get runs on the table, and see where it goes from there. Now, beyond that, I refuse to comment, because I'm not at liberty to, I don't know what happened, why the selectors never, you know, entertained having him. But I guess now they're probably kind of rethinking and saying, hey, we should have given this kid an opportunity. And I kept saying it, and this is why I go back to the point. For me, I'm not giving myself any credit here, but I say it with the most of respect. I have a very, very good relationship with most of the senior players that have come through the West Indies setup back in Trinidad, Barbados, Jamaica. I maintain a good relationship with these guys. They're friends of mine, but when it comes to the cricket of it, it's all professional. Josh is one of the kids that these guys have been looking at closely. They know that at some point he's going to make it to the top. I think it came sooner than he expected, but everything comes through God's timing, as we say. So yeah, for me, seeing where Josh is now, I'm very, very happy. I feel like, you know, for him, he could not have been more thankful. He kept saying thanks for the opportunity, because every new door that opens for him is, it helps improve his skill set. It's a different experience. So there's no league, not because it's he came to Toronto. It's not anything lesser than playing in Trinidad. And I always say this to a number of players that come here. Don't underestimate the standard here. The standard's high. The facilities may not be great. The wickets may not be good. But that kind of pushes players to dig deeper to score runs. You know, the quickies to bend their backs.
100%, man. Like, imagine the West Indies team right now has two guys who basically were stuck in a rock and a hard place, came to Toronto to play some cricket on, yeah, some very trying conditions, cold, wet sometimes. Shamar Brooks, Josh De Silva, like, talk young guy and Josh coming up quick, and then an older statesman and Shamar, both were in similar situations, both started it out with cricket in Toronto, and like, just that opportunity and the story that you explained is amazing. I had no idea about that. I had no idea he was Canadian.
Yeah, I had figured that not too many of the local players knew, but I know a couple of the clubs knew that he was local, and I mean, we declared that with the league, obviously, because I've had three foreign players, and I mean, I don't want to get into any problems with it. We stay within the parameters of the laws, right?
What I would really not like suggest, but like in terms of, yeah, we have to do our part, right? So there's minds like yourselves, there's guys like yourselves, even for RC and I, if we have this platform now, like we've obviously played, but how do we all get our minds, our, like, I know everybody thinks they're a selector and everybody thinks they know cricket, but to miss out on opportunities like that, like it goes to that sort of, I think, era that we're in. RC, like, what are your sort of takes on that, man? Like, I know we're in a new era now, but I know there's a guy in Tasmania now. There's Nicholas Curtin, who's a good top fucking player. I mean, he had his struggles in one tour, but give them a chance, right? Like I always said it, give somebody a substantial chance, like a couple tours, six, seven innings. And I think that's good enough. Six, seven innings, if you haven't cemented a high 50 match winning, not out sort of situation, at least one, there's that, then you're never going to see somebody's actual potential, right? But this is crazy news to me. And I guess, you know, hard luck to Canada, Yar.
The one thing I say about Josh is he always played with a smile on his face. I remember facing him last year, and he smiled throughout the entire game. And then if you watch this test match that just passed, Shane Darvish got hit in the lip, and he had to come out and keep. And I don't think he stopped smiling the entire innings that he was keeping. And that's somebody who just plays cricket for the right reasons, and we wish him all the best and all the success in the world. Maybe when he's 35, 40 and his West Indies career is done, the Canadian selectors will probably wake up and pick him for Canada at that point. So on that note, you know, transitioning from local cricket now to a bigger stage, we mentioned earlier you're the CEO of the Vancouver Knights. Tell us a little bit about how the GT20 firstly came about, and then how did you decide that this was something that you wanted to get involved in and your involvement start?
Well, again, it's I shouldn't say it's a funny story. It's just weird because when I first heard of the GT20 coming, I heard this was pretty late. I think we were almost about to prepare for the new season, the local season T&D. And a few people came with this, and I'm hearing about this T20 tournament happening, and I'm like, no way in Toronto that a tournament of this magnitude that you guys are talking about is ever going to happen. Because I just couldn't see where the finance was coming from and the investors and, more importantly, the infrastructure. Where was this going to be taking place, right?
Yes. And we've all heard that story before, right? That story has come up over the years, how many times that a tournament is coming, a tournament is coming, and then nothing comes of it.
I don't know. I'm yet to figure out who recommended me to the league's owner. This guy called me up. He invited me to a meeting. It was him and a couple of the directors for GT20 that flew in from India. I guess they were meeting with a few local guys that they wanted involved. They told me that they wanted me involved at some capacity. And I said, hey, if you guys are serious about it, I'm all for it. Anything to benefit the game. If you guys are saying that this is what you want to put into place and put into perspective, we need this. The cricket in this country needs something like this. The players need this. So I was all in. For me, it was never about anything about money. It was more so about getting this thing off the ground and helping in whatever way possible. It turned out, to fast forward a bit now, in a couple of weeks, I got another call. They had a few meetings with them. So the Vancouver franchise was the first team to be sold. And they were looking for someone to basically to run the franchise. So I said, okay, so at what capacity? Team CEO. I'm like, okay, well, no problem.
not a bad title.
No, exactly. Well, it started off as they actually were talking about doing the team manager's role, and then that quickly changed in a couple of hours, and they said they're going to just assign liaisons, local guys, and give them the opportunity and whatever. Right? I think they had a struggle in terms of selling teams the first year. I'm not sure if you guys know, but Vancouver was the only team that was sold. The other five franchisees were basically four. West Indies B was not for sale. But I accepted it, obviously, because I said to myself, I'm already doing a similar role at Masters. This is a bigger league. This is far supersede what I'm doing locally. But I love a challenge. I challenge myself. One thing that came my way a lot of was a lot of critique. A lot of people thought I was destined for failure. That never caused me to get flustered. That actually motivated me to do even better. And by the grace of God, at the end of that season, we lifted the title. So I didn't have to say anything to any of these people. I don't like to dwell on negativity, but more so this I thought was fantastic. Getting GT20 off the ground, the tournament started. There was teething problems, which was expected. It was never going to be perfect. I knew it because from the very inception, to get everything into perspective in such a short window would have always been a challenge, right? I think these guys deserve some sort of credit, and a lot of credit, I should say. From Cricket Canada to the GT20, all the owners moving into season two. Yes, there was issues, major issues between the Cricket Canada exec regime at that time and the GT20, because there were so many changes in season two. I'm kind of all over the place with this conversation, but I know we're limited for time. But the thing is, in a nutshell, GT20 was a blessing for this country, for cricket and for young cricketers and aspiring cricketers. I think the vision plan going forward with these guys is phenomenal. If it could be put into perspective, I'm hoping and I'm praying that this new Cricket Canada committee, they put their feet down, they sit with these guys, and let's get the resources needed to get into the schools, start building programs a bit more. I know there's already cricket in some of the school boards that's going on, but we need to get it more. We need to get in there a bit more rapid and let it expand and have a proper system in place so that it's not just the Pakistani guys, the West Indian parents, and, you know, that's, you know, sending their kids for training. We need some of the Canadian kids. We need some of the Caucasian kids to get that feeling and that interest in the game. You know, it's a long shot, but it's possible. You know what I mean? So, like I said, I mean, with the whole concept of GT20, I mean, we moved into season two. They sold more teams, which was better, because for us as local boys here, we want to ensure that GT20 does well. If it does well, if there's continuity, you know, these owners are pumping millions of US of dollars into this tournament just to make it happen. They're losing money for the first few years, just like any other franchise league around the world, until they start making money. One thing that really stood out for me was having conversations with guys like Chris Gayle and Andrew Russell, Tim Salty, all the big players that came through the ranks of Vancouver Knights for the past couple of years. Believe it or not, these guys prefer to come to Toronto and play cricket because it's a whole new, it's a new country. It's something new for them to see. You know, the Caribbean is the Caribbean. We love to go to the Caribbean because there's beaches there. These guys are fed up of that.
Yeah.
You know, they go to England, it rains a lot, it's a bit damp. They come to Toronto in the middle of summer, there's so much going on. These guys are party animals. You know, there's Caribana, you know, there's so many places to go sightseeing. They could hit up the parties, and that's what they want. They want to do something different. And this is what Toronto brings for these guys, is that they see something different. You know, it's a different vibe. And it's all in the fun. You know, they bring the vibe for us. You know, they come out here, they entertain, you know, they uplift the young players. The Canadian boys have the opportunity to play around these big players. You know, they rub shoulders with them, they learn from them. And that's what we want. We want this thing to continue. So, like I said, there's been tons and tons of critique coming from all sides. And I'm telling you from a franchise perspective, as well as the league's perspective and Cricket Canada. I cannot speak for Cricket Canada. I have all the respect for these guys. I'm not sure how they run their organization and what their mandate is. I know that the structure has changed. There's a new president, and I wish him all the best. For me, a few people have always asked me, how come I haven't, stepped up to assume a role? The answer is I was never asked. It's not that I'm looking for an opportunity, but anyone that knows me, when it comes to cricket in this country, I'm all in. As long as it's to uplift, as long as you guys are transparent and you guys, there's fair play across the board, I'm in. If there's an organization that's lopsided and, it's not fair play across the board, I'm no part of it. And I'm not saying that was the case before or now. I'm just saying that this is how Masters was run for the past 20-odd years I've been to this country. We've run it very professional. We've raised the bar. We are one of the few clubs, that salary every single player. I shouldn't have said that all too loud because that put me in some problems here going forward. But anyways, it's the way that we've taken things. There should be some sort of fair play across the board locally. The local boys need to feel as if they are important. They are important. They're the future they're the ones that go out there to represent the country. So it starts from the club level, So, not drifting away from the GT20 issue, but like I said, it's phenomenal. It's something that we want to see work and continue on for many years to come so that, the younger generation growing up will have a league to aspire towards. And I've said this in a couple interviews before that, when these young kids show up during the summer and to look at some of these GT20 games, they can probably already vision themselves. Because I'm thinking when I was a kid and I go to the Queen's Park Oval in Trinidad, I want to play for Trinidad. I want to play for the West Indies. So now that this is actually happening, it's giving these kids something to dream towards or to aspire towards, as opposed to going to King City and you're playing on a couple half-dead turf wickets and, the ground keeps getting bumpier and bumpier every year. I mean, I have to be critical about it. I run one of the more successful clubs in the country, right? Well, one of the main guys. But the thing is, we're spending money, and this is something that I've kind of gotten into a few of the T&D executives, that I don't know where we're going wrong. I mean, and I'm not being critical about it to any specific individual, but I think, listen, if you guys are charging $6,000 a year for a Super 9 team by 16 teams or whatever, then you have the Premier, you have all the other leagues. Let's try to do something to enhance the facility, right? It's not cutting it. It's not cutting it at all. I mean, all the clubs are complaining.
I'm 100% with you. Like, it's been years now. Like, I mean, we've talked about it here. It's about the infrastructure, right? Like, everything looks so good in Canada with GT20 coming along. You look at two opposite sides of the spectrum. So, yeah, like you said, right? Like, and we're obviously excited about the future. So this new Cricket Canada administration, I know, has very close ties to the T&D. I, for one, hope the T&D becomes and can restructure their domestic program, which then ties into grassroots. Because you said earlier in the interview, you talked about grassroots and you thought of club cricket as grassroots. Yeah. And I'm with you on that 100%. Schools and that, great. You're going to need a different kind of program to work with school boards that are not very familiar with the sport. That's different. But grassroots means parents like yourself, soon-to-be parents like RC and myself, right? God willing, and yeah, not too soon. And but that's what it's all about is trying.
Yeah.
Because how many of our colleagues who are a bit older, their kids know the game inside out. They don't play the game though, and it's not playing the game. You just enjoy the game. Like GT20 brings the cricket on TV, and there's all that hype around it. But that link has to be there now. That link between the GT20, yes, that's a higher thing. It's bringing in money, hopefully, for the infrastructure, to Canada cricket, to the league, and a fresh start, a restart. And it starts with the infrastructure. Like you said, guys playing the game, we need the grounds. We need the grounds. Like, that is the most important thing, is improve the grounds. Because let's be honest, we hear, like, you own a team in the T&D. I haven't been playing much for the last few years, but I hear about Brampton and Mississauga and these grounds there that are turf and they're unbelievable, shady. You got to see these grounds. You got to see.
Yeah.
I don't even believe it. Like you, when they told you about GT20, you don't believe. I don't even believe it. I would have to see it. So those are facts. And, you know, is the league changing? Are we going to separate? Are teams looking to separate? How much longer can they take? Or is there a new restructuring and here we go? There's new things to be excited about.
Yeah, that's a good point you brought up there with Brampton and Mississauga, right? Because I've spoken to a few guys and I wouldn't be surprised if some of the clubs decide to pull out of T&D and maybe go to Brampton, right? These guys have some pretty nice facilities there. I've seen a few of them. Again, and I say this with all the respect to the T&D executive, I'm very close to a number of these guys. I admire the work that they do. But, and I say this again very, very respectfully, we need to improve the facilities. That's the bottom line. If we don't improve, we don't give the guys anything near to what they're going to be accustomed to when they go into the Canadian team, going to, you know, all these first-class venues. You need first-class venues at grassroots so that it helps you enhance your skill set. So when you go to the higher level, you go to represent Canada, you go to a World Cup qualifier, you're accustomed fielding on a lush outfield. You have a decent turf wicket to bat on, so the batters can actually apply themselves rather than, you know, they're fending off a ball that might be popping from just, you know, just in front of them, you know?
Tight screen.
Exactly. Those are key things. And that's one of the things. When Josh came, I'll go back to Josh, as he brought up the point about side screens. We were playing Vikings. Yeah, we were playing Vikings on the E-ground. And he was complaining because it was tough for him to see the ball. It was getting dark in the afternoon. He won that game for us, mind you. And I remembered they brought on one of the spinners. I think it was Raj. And he just chipped down to Raj and hit him over in the cornfield. You know, and I figured, well, why are you complaining about the side screen? No, he's like, you know, when the quickies are on, I can't see. You know, but no, it's a safety critical thing. I mean, the side screen are supposed to be, you know, one of the most prominent things there. I mean, you have guys like Jeremy Gordon and amongst other seamers coming in at you. These guys are quick. You know what I mean? And the average Canadian player, I've always said this, and I don't care who's upset at me. Canadian batsmen, most of the guys, they're not good players of genuine pace. I'm telling you. You get rapid pace, these guys are in trouble. I'm telling you. And it's something because of, you know, over the years, we haven't had guys with rapid pace, you know, 90 kilometers and, you know, consistently. I think the closest would have been probably Jeremy. Correct me if I'm wrong. Before him was the legend, Henry Oscindy. So he might be happy with us here and that. But, you know, I think he was still gentle medium. But we'll give him a bit of credit, you know. Oh, yeah. No, no.
You didn't mention my name, that's which is kind of disappointing, but that's fine. I want to go back to a topic, and I'm sure that we could talk about King City and how bad that is. Well, we want to get to that. You mentioned some of these big names that they want to come to Toronto. They want to see the facilities. What I want to know is, what was it like handling these big personalities? You got the likes of Chris Gayle, Andre Russell, Evan Lewis, Tim Southee, all in one team. Shoaib Malik last year as well.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you, and how was it handling all these personalities and egos all in one team?
Well, to sum it up in a nutshell, year one was a big challenge for me because you're dealing with different personalities, a different attitude. These guys, when they showed up, they're accustomed to everything being in place. As you would know, because GT20 was in the first season and, you know, there was a number of things that needed to be straightened out prior to even when guys, there were simple things like flights being booked for some players, are supposed to be business class, they booked economy, and we had to switch things last minute. So yes, it was a challenge. There was a bit of, you know, tempers being thrown back and forth. I tried to mediate as best as possible. It worked out in the end. And I think, like I said, these guys, as long as you're genuine and you're somebody of your word, you stick to what you promise, that's all they want. You promise these guys a salary. You pay them when you're supposed to pay them. This is how they live. This is how they pay their bills. So managing these guys for me, the thing is, I never really had the day-to-day issues to deal with. That's where the team manager came in. So everything was coming through the channel, but then I had to approve everything. to mediate certain things. So I found myself in season one. I had Shanti Kumar as the team manager. So everybody that screamed at him, he was ready to cry. Poor guy. So I had to help him out. So I stepped in. I was actually spending almost every day, a couple hours at the hotel, just getting things straightened out, and all for the best interest, not of the franchise only, but for the league itself. Because I think what ended up happening, season one, I was the only team CEO, because none of the other teams were sold. So the rest of the teams was all liaisons. There was a couple of mentor CEOs that they brought in to help out. So I actually helped with a couple of the other franchises as well, because we just wanted things to go smoothly without any hiccups. But as we transition into season two, it became easier for me because now I've become more of a friend than a team CEO to all these players. And that's what I wanted, because it makes my job easier, you know? Even planning the draft for season two, having that bit of a friendship with Chris and Dre Ross and the rest of the senior players, for me, it was my first official draft. And I'll just give you a little bit about this for a couple of minutes, because season one, I don't think much people knew. The GT20 owners appointed coaches and a captain, and they did a closed door draft. So I was never involved in the draft. Like I said, at that point, when I was asked to become the team CEO, everything was already in place. The teams were already selected. They were just ready to just unleash. So season two was a bit more challenging, but it was also exciting at the same time, where the draft was actually in Mumbai. So we had to fly out to Mumbai. One of the problems that we had was obviously securing a sanction. There was some back and forth with the Sassini and ICC and GT20. So long story behind that. So everything was a bit rushed. For me, I was planning my draft from January. I think we were one of the only teams that were able to retain so many players, because with owners coming in, assuming the ownership of the other franchises, they didn't have that advantage that I had, right? I was already there from season one. I was able to maximize on the rules and the retention rules and this sort of stuff. The only disappointment I would say in the draft in Mumbai was that we received a call the morning of the draft about the Canadian players. And this is something I take no pride in saying, and I have to be critical about it, is that a list was provided to us only with the exact amount of names to select from. And that's in the Canadian players. So there were notable names that was left out. A lot of the national players were not on that list. It threw me right off. We had to actually regroup that morning and figure out who are we going to draft now, right? So they actually pulled back my retention. Saad, obviously, was one of the guys I was going to retain because of his performance in season one. It was the only obvious. So they said, no retention of Canadian players. Everybody goes into the draft. So when I looked at the list of everybody, it was the exact names, amount of names to be drafted. There were two groups. There was the A group and a B group. And to me, I think personally, I lost a lot of respect for some of the Canadian cricket administrators for that. And I think anyone, even the other owners that was looking at this list, they were baffled, because they were actually looking at the Ravindus and the Junaid Siddiquis and all of these guys. You know what I mean? And I mean, I'm not saying anything less of the guys on the list. Don't get me wrong. But how is this fair play? When you have a tournament of this magnitude in Canada and you have guys that's currently on the Canadian team that's not in the draft, how does that make sense? So, I mean, I have to be critical about this. For me, I see Shady laughing, but yeah, no, it was a joke. It was a joke. And I was scrambling. Thankfully, I made a couple strategic moves in the guys that I hired to help me for season two. So I had AR Srikant. He's the guy that single-handedly drafts the KKR's team for Venki Mysore. He's brilliant with drafting. So he was my analyst. So he sat in the draft with me alongside the head coach, Donovan Miller. But then when it came to the Canadian picks, they were dependent on me. So I'm put in a position where they're like, what do we do here? Right?
Some of the guys don't even know.
Bro, but you know what the funny thing was? I had the last pick because we were the winning team. I had the last pick in the first round for the Canadian picks. And the guy that I obviously wanted was, I wanted Saad back, not only because of that left-arm spinner is critical on these wickets, right? Nobody drafted him, and I got him. Like, there's a God, man. There's a God shining down on me tonight, you know? And we ended up getting him, and then I had to just go with the flow. I had to go with the flow based on how the picks were going. Because we were the winning team, we had, like, the later picks in round one and round two. So everybody was grabbing up all the better names on the list that was there, right? So it was already a list that I personally was not too pleased with. I mean, the other owners, they don't know better because they don't really know much of the local boys. And they were hoping and asking questions around with local, you know, to find out who are the guys they should be looking at. But obviously, the names that they were looking at is the research they did on Cricket Info or Cricket Canada's website. And it's all the Canadian players, right? Who's there, and those guys were not on the list. So, you know, I mean, I don't mean to go off on a whole tangent here about this, but it's something that needed to be mentioned, and it has to be corrected going into season three. That should have been this year, but because of COVID, we hope that next year, you know, everything rolls out. And I think, you know, we should be okay for next year, God willing.
I mean, obviously, being in India, we were all watching that too, and some of the players in our club at Toronto Cricket Club, their names were missing, and they were dumbfounded as well. So we had some insight into that, but just knowing that that was the case, I mean, it's some of the stories that we've already heard on this podcast, nothing will baffle us anymore hearing stories from the past. So the one thing I did want to ask was, you've seen a lot of success in your career, specifically from your administration side. So I'm going to touch on that, right? With Brampton Masters, you're probably the most successful club in the 21st century in cricket in Toronto. You've won a number of championships. And then obviously now with Vancouver Knights, you've gone back-to-back into the finals, winning one, coming short in the second one in a super over, which I'm sure you don't want to talk about, so we'll leave that there.
I want to talk about it tonight, please. I want to forget that game.
What's the secret sauce to success for you, and what kind of a culture are you looking to build that has helped you get to the success that you've had so far?
Listen, there's no secret. Everybody asks me the same thing. It's hard work. Like I said, in season two, because I had that luxury and that opportunity we won season one. So my team owner was all happy. He said, you're the man, you know, they're all happy. Owners are like that. So the moment I know we were going into season two, I already started planning from January, like I said, and literally January, I had daily calls with my head coach in London. And I'm not even joking. This guy would call me at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm driving into work. He's like 6-7 hours ahead there, and we'll just be discussing plans, how we're going to do this, you know. But then the rules kept changing, but with that, we didn't let that, you know, sidetrack us. To me, it's all about planning, putting things into perspective early, and you must have a few different backup plans, right? And for I think the key thing for us was that trying to draft close enough or retain as much players as possible, because I think what the secret to our success in season one was that chemistry. And I'm sure you guys would have seen that Vancouver was West Indian heavy, right? And I had a conversation with Chris about this, Chris Cale, when they were actually selecting that team, him and the head coach, they didn't want to risk too much. So what they did is they tried to put a core together of guys who would have gelled, you know, they're friends as well too.
Yeah.
But it was also the right combination. We had the Timothy Salty, you know, we had Rassie van der Dusen, who was basically not too much people knew about him, right? And I remember Rassie from the year before in the CPL for St. Kitts Patriots. The thing with Rassie, I stand corrected. Rassie's breakout was in GT20, sorry. And there's a story behind this. Rassie was with the last pick for Vancouver. Remember, I wasn't part of the draft. He was the last pick in season one at $3,000. Wow. Rassie van der Dusen came back to Vancouver Knights season two as a $60,000 player.
Wow.
So, I mean, that just goes to, this is just an example for the Canadian boys to aspire towards, because they can be bought at any pay category. They don't have to be bought as a Canadian player. They can be bought, you know, within the draft itself. So, I mean, going back to what you were asking before, I saw after season one, there's a couple opportunities that opened up for me that was very welcoming. I was very happy and proud of that. I spent some time with the TKR franchise in CPL as an observer. I learned a lot with those guys down there. It's a great franchise. It's a good atmosphere to be around, a great bunch. So I absorbed as much as I could. And for me, it's exactly what I wanted, is to be exposed to different leagues and to try to learn as much as possible. As far as I see myself as an administrator, and here in Canada, being the CEO of a franchise, it's a big role. It's a big name. It's just a name. For me, I'm humble. I'm simple. I'll carry on a conversation with anybody normal. There's nothing different. And I interact with everybody within the franchise and other teams as well. After the CPL was done, I had a call from the PSL with Islamabad United. And that, I think, was a turning point for me to be a part of their technical staff and learning from some of these great guys that, I mean, when you see how the PSL is run, like every different franchise league, it's far different. It's special in its own way. It's unique. You know, CPL is all about the party atmosphere, but when it's time to get the job done, these guys, there's lots of work to get done there. GT20 has their work cut out. It's a different atmosphere. You go to PSL, buddy, that's a religion. That's probably the closest I got. I think I would get to IPL. My goal really is to have an opportunity at the IPL at some level. I mean, it's not easy to get in. But for me, like I said, and I keep saying this to people, it's never about finance. It's never about money. It's about educating yourself, learning from some of these great people that have built franchises and franchisees around the world, and they're successful at it. And the reason for success is they have to be doing something right. So why not rub shoulders with some of these guys and try to absorb? And this is some of the things that I bring back to my local club, you know, and I try to do things in a more innovative way, as opposed to how things were run years ago. The times have changed. You know, you got to be a bit flexible. The needs of players have changed. You know, the way they train, it's different. So it helps you all around. For me, I've seen that with all these opportunities that came up. I was supposed to go back to PSL this year. It didn't happen due to issues with my work and stuff, and I had to make a tough decision. But yeah, I mean, for me, I must say I have to be grateful for GT20. It did open a lot of doors to me. I guess when you least expect things to happen, there's always somebody looking at you and looking at what you're doing. If you're doing the right things, I think at some point you get rewarded. And for me, that's the way I took that. Like I said, I don't deal too much with negativity. That has always been around me. And I think, you know, everybody at some point in their career, I think it's how you deal with it. As Johnny would tell me, Riz, you got to kill them with love. And that's what he did. And I know, and I mean, we could laugh about it, but and I'm sure Shady could attest to this, because Shady spent a lot of time with Johnny as well. And this is one of his mantras, you know. We would fight with Toronto Cricket Club. We'll fight with Vikings, with the Centurions, with everybody. But after the game, let me tell you something. This man, he'll call you over. The cooler's full with beers. And he goes, "Come, you have a beer, guy." And then there's food. I don't know. It's just the way he lived and the way that he was just able. He had that tenacity to just to harness friendship, man, with the worst of enemies.
I think the secret sauce is Johnny Bujan. I think the secret sauce to how, you know, everything you talked about in terms of who mentored you towards this sort of pathway. Yeah. And everything you obviously talked about him, I think that his legacy lives on just through that, and obviously through you, and there's a little bit of a lucky charm there with the Masters and now the success of Vancouver, and so congratulations to that. I also loved how you talked about players being the main event. Like, you know, times have changed. I know that a lot of players within the Cricket Canada circuit would love to be heard now.
Yeah.
Those guys who missed out on that GT20, and you've just talked about it very candidly. It's in black and white. Yeah. Imagine those guys must be feeling, or must have been feeling at that time. I know the sacrifices that go into being a player or a cricketer in Canada or playing for the country. Sorry, there's a lot of sacrifice there, and I think players need to be the focus of everything going forward in building that. And I think what you explained about your time dealing with big egos and big guys, it's humble guys like yourself who are very cricket specific and cricket focused and want the best for the game. And I think there's no denying that in just kind of the way you speak and obviously knowing you for years. And Johnny was the same. And I think if there's any secret sauce, it's Johnny Bujan and Riz, man. Like, this was an unbelievable interview, man. The way that you spoke was amazing. And I think very, very detailed. RC and I didn't really say much. I'm actually just sitting here just going, fuck.
These platforms, we got to use these platforms to get the right message across, right? Like I said, for me, my intent, my ambition is to see cricket in this country go back to the top. We need to get it back up there at some point. It's going to take some work. And I know that the present administration, these guys, whatever mandate that they have, their intentions are good. It's for people like yourself and me and amongst other clubs to work together with these guys. As long as they're open, they're transparent, they're willing to take suggestions and to have fair play across the board. Simple things as the selection of that national team and having a proper structure, having programs in place. I keep going back to the point about the way and how innovative the training methods have become. I mean, you're a personal coach. You know what I'm talking about. It's not like years ago, you come to King City, you run a lap and you do two stretches. It's not like that, buddy. It doesn't work like that anymore. And I mean, for me, fortunately, and I say this very humbly, is that my exposure to different leagues around the world have shown me that, hey, cricket goes beyond just the bat and the ball. You know, it's about the relationships that you've built. And that's why I've held whatever I learned from Johnny over the years, I've held that close to my heart and I've implemented that in every aspect of life, not just cricket. You got to be able to deal with people and deal with people straight, you know? Treat people, even though they don't want the best for you, kill them with love, as Johnny said, you know?
I think we got the name of this episode down, so, kill them with love. That's the name of this episode. We're knocking that one down right there. Riz, we're right at the bottom of the hour here, so I want to thank you. I mean, I think Shady just mentioned it a little bit earlier. This was a great interview. Lastly, what we like to do at the end of each episode is just give you the last word. So I'm going to hand it off to you here. Thank you for joining us, and we'll give you the last word.
All right. Well, guys, I just want to say thank you for having me on. I've followed some of the podcasts that you guys are doing. It's excellent. You guys continue doing what you're doing. I think this is definitely it's informative. It's educational. Keep bringing the right people on, and they can add value to your content, to your podcast. It was a pleasure being here, and I just want that at whatever level, whatever else you guys need me for, as long as it's to improve cricket, I'm in, 100%. All the best to you guys.
And there you have it, folks. I know we haven't mentioned it in a while, but this podcast is sponsored by The Bat Clinic. You can find The Bat Clinic on Instagram at @the_bat_clinic. And remember, you get 10% off with the promo code Dropped Again. As the season approaches, I know some of you have been going hard in the nets. Some of those bats might get a little nick, a little crack. Reach out to The Bat Clinic, and once again, you can get 10% off using the promo code Dropped Again. And Shady, what an interview that was. I want to ask you, we're starting to see leagues open up again. IPL has just set their date. CPL, I mean, Saad's already just checking his Instagram story from this morning. He's already down there in the Caribbean. What are your thoughts on the GT20 for next year? Do you think that it will take place next year? And if so, what sort of environment do you feel like it's going to be in?
I think it heavily it depends on like the synergy with the new Cricket Canada like administration. I know that there was a lot of hurdles for the GT20 working with Cricket Canada's last administration, and it takes that, you know, they're on the same page, because dude, who doesn't want like Andre Russell here? Like, we want to go see the guy. And more than that, man, the opportunities for the Canadian players, not even like, so I'm a little bit indifferent about if you're in the national team, should you be one of the guys in the GT20 squads? Like, I don't know about that. I don't know.
See, I don't think it's about being in the squad, though, right? It's giving them the ability to be drafted. Some of those players weren't in the draft.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think
that's where the problem came. Not that they have to be on the squad.
To sum that up, my perspective is just I'm always a high performance guy. So you've got the GT20 here. They're playing T20 matches. They're using Kookaburra balls, right? They're setting the standard. The wickets are decent. They're cutting the grass. So they're setting, they're showing what cricket is. So when they're, it's a professional thing. It's on TV. They're coming to Canada, to Toronto, to the GTA. And you're looking at how the grass is. You're looking at what the structure, how does this infrastructure kind of look just within the friggin' field. There's a sight screen on both sides. Try taking these guys to a ground like King City and like, sorry, Chris Gayle, you got to face fucking whoever from the other side and there's no sight screen. Like, these guys are not going to take it serious. You gave them the professional environment, which I thought was fantastic apart from the glass around the grounds there. But it was high performance stuff and like everything was high performance, right? So, okay, let's take that now. And GT20 is supposed to do wonders for Canada cricket, right? Let's look at it. What is that doing for us? And I'm talking about us as in Canada cricket, not Cricket Canada, but cricket within Canada. How are we following suit? So like, I'm not playing. I just know from one of the groups, dude, like look at the balls they're using in this local T20, like the top standards. This is a domestic T20 that the TND put out, MLCC T20. They're not even using Kookaburra balls. Like how are we supposed to go from Division 4 or 3 back up to that status if those little things might cost you an extra $40? I won $250 last night. I'll fucking give that $250 to bring the standard up if I could buy a few balls. I'm not even joking, because you know what? It sounds funny. You might be laughing, but like that's where it starts, man. Everything has to be high performance, man. Like I don't understand what $20, $30 difference is making. Do you have any into the tournament? Like, I know you're playing and I know like whatever, but I would like for us to get a little more information, because I could be talking out of my ass and maybe they used the Kookaburra ball. I wasn't there, but you could talk a little bit about that, RC.
Well, they did not use a Kookaburra ball, and they're using a pink ball versus a white ball in this as well, which is strange. I mean, pink ball was created for day-night test cricket. Right? It's not meant to be used in the T20 format. And the argument that was made was that there was a shortage of supply. Now, I find that very hard to believe, considering there hasn't been cricket worldwide for 3 months, that there's a shortage of supply of white cricket balls. There's definitely no shortage of supply of white balls, but white cricket balls, apparently there's a shortage.
Man, that's sad to hear, dude. Like, I've always been an advocate to, like, when I was captaining the club, we had the captains meetings like before the TND, you know, I'd always push for the top balls to be used. Like, I don't know how we expect to get back to the top level when our top players playing in the top leagues are not using the top balls that they're going to use I rub people the wrong way, but like, dude, this is not fucking rocket science here.
I 100% agree with that. I think, so this is what we'll do. This is our promise to our listeners. We will get some more information on this 2020 league for next week. And we're going to shed some more light onto the tournament itself, what it means, who's playing. Cause also some of the top teams did not register a team for this tournament either. So a lot of teams did not register a team. And that's something Rizwan spoke about in this interview, about teams potentially leaving the TND. So that's an interesting one as well. So we're going to cover that next week, and we're going to get some more information on this. If you have some information, feel free to send it all along our way. And with that wraps up another episode of Dropped Again. We thank you once again for listening. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We want to thank Rizwan Mohammed for this interview, and we look forward to speaking to you next time.
Zabardast, yaar!
Adios.
Peace.